Sun Oil Company presents the Sunoco News Voice of the Air, Lowell Thomas. And tonight we pay tribute to the men who fly and fight on Uncle Sam's B-29s, those super fortresses of the air which are carrying the battle right into Hirohito's homeland. Brave men flying remarkable machines powered by a super aviation fuel. And when it comes to aviation gasoline, here's a record we're proud of. In each of 4 separate months of 1944, one Sun Oil refinery blended more than 42 million gallons of 100-octane gasoline. No other refinery has equaled that record. It's the result of new Sunoco discoveries and advanced processes and plants. All further evidence that everything Sunoco does has victory as its purpose. Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes, Sunoco will present Hugh Gibson from New York. But first, to hear Lowell Thomas, we take you to NBC in Luxembourg.
Good morning, everybody. Over here in Central Europe, from where I'm broadcasting early this Thursday morning, the one thing we have been talking about since midnight is the word from the 9th Army Front, from Simpson's Advanced Armored Spearboat, that our troops have reached the city of Magdeburg, the River Arrow, only about 70 miles from Berlin tonight. Of course, the Army officers and men and correspondents and radio people here have had other exciting things to talk about during the day, during Wednesday, that is, up until midnight an hour ago, such as the news coming in from the Russians, telling of how they have now completely surrounded Vienna, and of how General Patton's forces have advanced into Thuringia, even beyond the capital city of Erfurt, which they have surrounded. And then coming on north to the 9th Army, the German commander of the garrison in the city of Brunswick, where the meek Heron folk yesterday seemed to be trying to surrender to Colonel Doc McGee's thunderbolt circling overhead. Well, we learned today that the commandant had decided to defend that city, whereupon the 9th Army simply bypassed Brunswick, hurrying on toward Berlin. And now the word that they have reached Magdeburg on the Elbe, Berlin, the next stop, just up the road. Now, is that all the good news tonight? Simpson's 9th and General Courtney Hodges' 1st Army have squeezed the Ruhr proper, overrunning many more square miles and giving the 100,000-odd hopelessly trapped Nazis and some 400,000 slave laborers there and 4 million German civilians in the Ruhr still less room in which to mill around. The word is that the Germans in the Ruhr are running out of ammunition. The question tonight seems to be, have the Russians lost their drive toward Berlin from the Oder? Hugh Gibson may have some news from you direct from the Russian army. And many of us are wondering whether General Simpson's 9th Army has a chance of getting there first, maybe within the next few days. For Simpson's armor, 70 miles to the outer city limits of Berlin, that's not far to go. And now about an experience or two at the 9th Army front, as I promised last night. Over battered cities and villages, down along Hitler's superhighway, the Autobahn, which is exactly like many of our four-lane concrete highways, over German ammunition and supply dumps of all sorts, with not a soul on guard, over railway yards, blasted to blazes, above dusty side roads with long convoys of heavily loaded American trucks speeding to the front with an utter disregard for Goering's Spanish legions of the sky, the once terrible Luftwaffe. Over all this I flew at treetop level in a tiny artillery observation and liaison plane. Just two of us. Lieutenant Wim Hamilton of Nashua, New Hampshire at the controls. And finally, up ahead, we saw smoke rising from the burning German city of Hamelin, the city of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, which is south of Hanover and farther east toward Berlin. Back at my Army headquarters, I had been told that the 30th Division was in Hamelin, still busy driving out the German troops, and that it might be plenty risky coming down in a cow pasture on the outskirts of the Pied Piper's hometown. Well, we circled above the gutted buildings, and we flew through the smoke, and then we bumped into a meadow right along the Weser River. And then in a jeep, we crossed the pontoon bridge, and we found Major General Leland Hall, who was in command of the 30th Division. In fact, found him there on the edge of burning Hamelin, dictating letters to America, answering mail from parents who were asking him about their boys. So much confidence did the general have in his men fighting right nearby that he could take time out to write a few letters to fathers and mothers and wives at home. He says he answers them all. And the 30th Division has a great record. It's one of the few military outfits of that size to receive the much-coveted presidential citation, with each man in the division now entitled to wear the new blue ribbon, new in this war, the one with the gold around it. I've had with me the names of several lads in Simpson's 9th Army, sons of neighbors. And I've been looking for Albert Johnson, son of the president of Temple University, and Les Ward, one of my own son's pals. And sure enough, to the surprise of both of us, I ran into Les on the outskirts of Hamelin. He had just taken 5 more German prisoners, he and a couple of his pals. We talked about home and his family and his bogey son for a half hour or so, and then I left Les as he headed on toward Berlin. I am betting on him and his buddies of the 9th Army winning the race to Hitler's capital, the once mighty and flourishing center of the German Empire, now a pile of rubble. Les, with his carpet at the ready, was moving that way. And now the 9th is at the River Arrow, on its bank tonight. It's incredible. And to return for a moment to the headline news, the 17th American Airborne Division today captured Essen, the great industrial city of Bellore. And the British tonight have only a river between them and the seaport of Bremen, at the mouth of the Weser, on the embattled bank of which river I have landed farther upstream in that artillery observation plane. And more than 1,000 American heavy bombers were smashing today at Nuremberg and Munich, while Patton's 3rd Army entered the German city of Coburg. Oh, yes, and what tales the American airmen have had to relate today. While lending a hand to Simpson's 2nd Armored Division, the one that stormed to the Arrow, a squadron of Thunderbolts of the 29th TAC, an outfit I've been visiting, shot down 17 new type long-nosed Focke-Wulf 190s in a great air battle that lasted an hour over the city of Magdeburg and over Berlin, with the loss of only one of our Thunderbolts. The German airmen, they had more fighting than usual, but Lieutenant Edward Edwards of Lansdale, Pennsylvania, shot down 4, chasing one almost to the Russian lines, right to the east of Berlin. And Ted Buckney of Watertown, New York, got credit for 2.5, and Bob Burns of Charleston, West Virginia, got 2 more of them. But wait, you haven't heard the half of it. Over the city of Harlem, a particularly aggressive and famous Mustang fighter group, 14 of our planes, spotted 25 or more ME-109s and FW-190s up above them, with the German flyers having all the advantage. But the Mustang pilots dropped their bombs and they dropped their belly tanks, and up they climbed to take on those Germans. Yes, and Captain Earl Brushwood of Moultrie, Georgia, destroyed 20 of the Nazi planes, he and his pals, and they damaged 6 more, and then raced back unscathed to their base to celebrate. 641 German planes destroyed by that P-51 outfit now, the Pioneer Mustang Group, they are called. The war over here is sure moving at high speed. And if it isn't all over but the shouting and some mopping up in the mountains of Bavaria before long now, well, then I'm the Pied Piper of Hamelin. So long, and back to Hugh Gibson in the USO.
Thank you, Lowell. We'll be listening to you again tomorrow. Good evening, everybody. At 8:30 this morning, at a point a little south of the German city of Brunswick, an American brigadier general spoke up with a brisk remark. He was the commander of the 2nd Armored Division of the 9th Army, Brigadier General Isaac D. White. They call his outfit Hell on Wheels because of the rampaging speed with which it has been striking across Germany, dashing to Brunswick and taking the lead in the race between the American armies for the Nazi capital. This morning, General White made the promise that his tanks would reach the River Elbe by nightfall. He vowed that by sundown, his armored units would be in the city of Magdeburg on the last important river line before Berlin. That might have seemed a rash boast, for it was 55 miles from Brunswick to Magdeburg on the Elbe, and 55 miles is almost incredible going for armor in battle. But Hell on Wheels made it. After their commander's jubilant promise, they started east in the most sensational sweep of the war. At only one place they halted, and only briefly. This was at the huge Goering steelworks, where some fanatical Nazis were entrenched. It didn't take the tanks long to smash resistance, and General White's division reached Magdeburg and the Elbe as the day closed at 8:30 Central European time. That places them within 60 miles of Berlin and 117 miles from a junction with the Russians. Here is a late sidelight. Brigadier General White was promoted today to Major General. Good hunting, General. Last night, the Western Front news sounded almost like a horse race, a speed competition between American armies, and tonight, the Ninth Army is far ahead. With that almost unbelievable dash forward today, 55 miles in 12 hours. That dizzy drive is eloquent evidence of the collapse of German resistance in the West, as proclaimed by General Eisenhower yesterday. You just don't go that fast unless the enemy in front of you is in a condition of utter collapse. To the south, the First Army in the race for Berlin ran into German resistance today, which slowed it down. The strategy of the air war today reflected the rapid turn of the military situation, the collapse of German resistance in the west. A dispatch from headquarters tells us that Allied air power has switched its mass attacks to a line separating enemy forces in North Germany from the South German mountains where the Nazis plan to make their last stand. In the final downfall of the Nazis, one essential feature will be a crash through of the Soviet armies on the east, where they are only 38 miles from Berlin. And indications are that a Russian breakthrough is already beginning. The Germans state that they have evacuated the town of Klesin, which is only 33 miles from Berlin. The report would seem to indicate that the Russians have driven forward thus that far. They add further that Soviet Marshal Zhukov has brought up a huge concentration of forces to the bridgeheads the Russians have established across the River Oder. The Soviet capture of Vienna is being completed. And one irony is the statement that the Germans in the Austrian capital are making their final stand in the old Jewish quarter. The purpose of the new Allied offensive in Italy was stated today as an attempt to crack German forces before they can fall back through the Alps to join the die-hard Nazis in their last defense in mountainous strongholds. Today, the forgotten front was flaming with action. After being stalemated in Italy for so long, British and American forces surged forward. They captured the great naval base of Spezia and today seized a whole string of towns. We have the statement that there are probably now in Italy more organized German divisions than there are on the Western Front. German morale in Italy is good and has not been greatly affected by the disasters on the Western Front. In the campaign for Okinawa, American troops today virtually completed the capture of a small but important island. This bit of land called Tsugen dominates Nakagusuku Bay on the east coast of Okinawa. The American landings encountered only moderate resistance, and the Japanese garrison was very small. Today, the chief town on the island was captured, and that just about settles matters on the island of Tsugen. On Okinawa, savage fighting continued today, and little progress was made against the powerful defense line from shore to shore, just north of the town of Naha. One dispatch today stated the Japanese have now opened a powerful bombardment with field guns and mortars, and progress was almost impossible. The Marines and Army troops are confronted by two formidable cliffs which protect Nahan. These cliffs are the principal obstacles, and dispatches from the front indicate that no considerable advance can be made until they have been taken. And now, Hugh James.
Mr. Motorist, there are no two ways about it. During the next few months, we're going to be up against a serious tire shortage here at home. There just simply won't be enough tires for everyone who needs them. So once again, Sunoco takes this opportunity of urging you to do everything you can to preserve your present tires. Drive slowly. Take corners easily. Keep your tires properly inflated. Take your tires into your local Sunoco Car Saver dealer for regular and frequent inspection. If he sees any small cuts or bruises, tell him to repair them immediately. And if he recommends recapping a tire, don't hesitate. Your Sunoco dealer can help add miles and months to the life of a tire by having it recapped. Now, speaking for Lowell Thomas, Hugh James says so long till tomorrow, and Sunoco reminds you to tune in again tomorrow night for Lowell Thomas from Europe and Hugh Gibson from New York. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And many of us are wondering whether General Simpson's Ninth Army has a chance of getting there first. Maybe within the next few days. For Simpson's armor, 70 miles to the outer city limits of Berlin, that's not far to go. And now about an experience or two at the Ninth Army front, as I promised last night. Over battered cities and villages, down along Hitler's superhighway, the Autobahn, which is exactly like many of our four-lane concrete highways, over German ammunition and supply dumps of all sorts, with not a soul on guard, over a railway yard, blasted to blazes, above dusty side roads with long convoys of heavily loaded American trucks speeding to the front with an utter disregard for Goering's vanished legions of the sky, the once terrible Luftwaffe. Over all this I flew at tip-top level in a tiny artillery observation and liaison plane. Just two of us, Lieutenant Wynn Hamilton of Nashua, New Hampshire, at the controls. And finally, up ahead, we saw smoke rising from the burning German city of Hamelin, the city of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, which is south of Hanover and farther east toward Berlin. Back at Ninth Army headquarters, I had been told that the 30th Division was in Hamelin, still busy driving out the German troops, and that it might be plenty risky coming down in a cow pasture on the outskirts of the Pied Piper's hometown. Well, we circled above the government building, and we flew through the smoke, and then we bumped into a meadow right along the Weser River. And then in a jeep, we crossed the pontoon bridge, and we found Major General Leland Howe, who was in command of the 30th Division. In fact, found him there on the edge of burning Hamelin, dictating letters to America, answering mail from parents who were asking him about their boys. So much confidence did the general have in his men fighting right nearby that he could take time out to write a few letters to fathers and mothers and wives at home. He says he answers them all. And the 30th Division has a great record. It's one of the few military outfits of that size to receive the much-coveted presidential citation, with each man in the division now entitled to wear the new blue ribbon, you in this war, the one with the gold around it. I had with me the names of several lads in Simpson's Ninth Army, sons of neighbors, and I've been looking for Albert Johnson, son of the president of Temple University, and Les Ward, one of my own son's pals. And sure enough, to the surprise of both of us, I ran into Les on the outskirts of Hamelin. He had just taken five more German prisoners, he and a couple of his pals. We talked about home and his family and his baby son for a half hour or so, and then I left Les as he headed on toward Berlin. I am betting on him and his buddies of the Ninth Army winning the race to Hitler's capital, the once mighty and flourishing center of the German Empire, now a pile of rubble. Les, with his carbine at the ready, was moving that way. And now the Ninth is at the River Arrow, on its banks and out. It's incredible. And to return for a moment to the headline news, the 17th American Airborne Division today captured Essen, the great industrial city.